I copied, but somebody kept keying, so Echolink wouldn't key or Echolink keyed, but I wasn't really transmitting. I graduated from what they then called WSUC, Washington Square and University College, in 1979 with a bachelor's in economics, a bachelor of arts. You said 77 in chemistry. Were you at Washington Square or still up in the Heights? I think they'd gotten rid of the Heights campus by then, no?
Yeah, they got rid of that. No, I was down at Washington Square in the park, and I still remember that plaque of Samuel Morse. So my major was chemistry. My minor was actually economics.
That's funny. You're about 2 years ahead of me, so I doubt we were in some of the same classes. Do you remember any of the econ professors?
Unfortunately, they didn't really leave an incredible record in my brain. I did take a course that was taught in economics. It was game theory. And the whole point was NYU had just stolen a rather relatively older gentleman who was a Nobel economics winner on game theory, and he was going to teach the class. And unfortunately, he was not healthy and gave it to some other guy to do the entire semester. So I never got to meet the Nobel Prize winning economist. But I still remember a game theory. I remember how annoyed that professor was. It was the point where no one kind of took it seriously outside of academia. So he kept on writing these nasty notes to the NFL that they were doing it all wrong. And I guess the NFL was just throwing his letters away.
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu.
Yeah, Rich, 1 second. Let me give Frank a little chance because he's on Echolink. You know how that feels.
Yeah, I guess it's what I get for trying to do ham radio on an iPhone. You're supposed to do ham radio on a radio, right? I think I know. Now, the name Ingo Walter comes to mind. I made course tests with him once or twice when I was at Stern, the Stern School of Business after I graduated Washington Square. And I kind of remember the course. I didn't have the guts to take it, but I remember hearing about it. I would imagine the professor who was stuck teaching it hated it. Anyway, that's interesting. Let me pass it over to BZ. Go ahead.
Yeah, the only reason I'm butting in again is when Paul mentioned, not Paul, when Moore mentioned something about the NFL. I wrote a stack of cards. I wrote a program on an IBM 360, which was card-based, to predict the attendance at an NFL game based on millions of variables. And I remember we used to hand the stack in and have to come wait 3 days to see if we had a syntax error. And I never did predict the attendance correctly. Huh. And my uncle was in the business, so maybe that's why I didn't stay in the business with him. There may have been some other stuff, but that's my NFL computer story.
Okay, very good, Rich. Getting back to my substitute professor, I think he was a born-again game theorist, again, because he used to keep on telling us about all the letters he was writing to the NFL, trying to explain to these guys why they shouldn't necessarily pick their first choice on early rounds. But sometimes they would end up winning the best group of people if they picked less than their first choices. And occasionally they got, you know, go away letters, but most of the time these coaches didn't even respond to him, and he took it very personal. So I think he was a heavy duty game theorist.
He was way ahead of his time, because today, I know in baseball, and I would strongly suspect in football also, they pay big money to these quant guys to do things like make draft picks for them. They take those number guys very seriously now, I understand.
You better believe it. They live by those number guys more in baseball than in football, I think. Not quite sure, but I think that might be true. I also graduated, had a first minor in sports management. I graduated in 1970, or got graduated, because we never had a graduation ceremony like this year because of the kids who got killed at Kent State. But there goes my battery. So I'll say 73, guys. And thanks, Roy.
You're welcome, Rich. 73, have a safe week, and we'll no doubt talk again real soon. Just a couple little stories. You mentioned that you shouldn't be operating with an iPhone. The first, might call it, the first ham radio conversation I had was after I got my license. I didn't have a radio. I had a cell phone. I got an Echolink account. I logged into Limark's repeater, and a gentleman who you can hear in the archives of the Technical Net, he used to hang out and discuss his theories, a guy named Alex from Romania, was in Romania on the Echo Link to W2VL, and that was my first USO as a ham.
Hearing that too, so... I'm mixed up with Wesley in my mind, but I know they're two different people. But I do remember hearing Alex from Romania on there. We used to get a lot more DX on TechNet. Not sure why we don't anymore. I guess it's just kind of the middle of the night in a lot of the world. But yeah, I know Moneyball is well known, and the quant guys are very well known in baseball. I'm sure football does it also. I'd be surprised if they don't. It's just more well known in baseball because of the movie. But yeah, you know, I do most of my HF operating. I do just about entirely through rental remote online. And the big controversy going on about that now is the ARRL is making noises about limiting the number of remote stations you can use and count the contacts for DXCC, for a variety of reasons. And... I actually sort of agree with it to a certain extent, but at the same time, the remotes are the best way for some of us to get on with a credible signal when we live in, HOA limited places that don't allow outdoor antennas. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good alternative to turn to. The problem is, I think from about 3 hours into this hobby, there were guys with clipboards who decided whether you were really an amateur radio operator or something else. And those clipboard guys are really active as far as hotspots and voice over IP and remote stations and all manner of things. If it touches the internet, it's been sullied from as far as these guys are concerned. I don't know. I take a less rigorous interpretation of this hobby. The idea is to have fun. If you're not having fun, you're obviously doing it wrong. But otherwise, I don't really understand the need for these qualified requirements one way or the other. I understand that they're in kind of competition with each other. I don't do contesting. I don't do tagging DX stations, so I'm kind of out of the fray, and I understand why some people would get annoyed with the fact that they have to try really hard and very long, and some guy rents a station that's across the street from a place, and they get points. But I don't know. I think they're missing the forest for the trees.
WB2KWC. I'm not sure there's a single forest. I think ham radio is, you know, so many things to different people, and you know, you do what turns you on. The other guy does what turns him on, and why fight over it?
I agree, but unfortunately, human beings are human beings, and. I mean, I think it only took me about 6 weeks from my license to have some cranky guy tell me that I was the problem with amateur radio, which I took as a positive aspect to my operating.
No, I don't think I've been told that until I started playing with FT8. I think I was too late for the cranky AM guys to tell me that the single sideband was bad, or for the, I don't know, the spark gap guy, way after the spark gap guys to tell me when I operated CW I was doing it wrong.
You realize, of course, that if the FCC, or it was probably the Navy back then, didn't make it illegal to use spark gap, that there would still be a hardened crew of spark gappers someplace, probably in a Faraday cage, who would keep on saying that this is the only really amateur radio. The rest is just nonsense.
We can't use spark gap?
Only in your car.
Why do that?
Okay, you're allowed to do it as a means of transportation, but no ditting and dying.
Yeah, that's good. I haven't laughed so hard in a while, at least not on ham radio. Yeah, I remember when I got on the air in 1971, I remember talking to my dad's contemporaries who at radio club meetings, who would tell me that it wasn't ham radio because I went to the store. I went to Barry Electronics and bought my TR-4. They had to build their one-tube Hartley oscillator, which was what my dad had as a kid, and their two-tube receiver to get on the air. And I just bought my radio. It's a bit like the argument about using remote sites and IP and EchoLink today, yeah?
Yeah, there are so many interesting different ways to trigger people. When I first got my license, I had a kind of unfortunate experience with a volunteer exam group that basically canceled me about 3 days before my test because no one else was going to show up to get the test, and they didn't want to have three people show up to test one guy. So they said, you know, bugger off. So I was so annoyed, I rescheduled with Yonkers, which is their rain or shine, and I took all three exams. And there were guys in my club who basically told me that that should never be allowed, that you have to age and mature in the hobby before you should be able to be eligible for higher licenses.
Volunteer exams? Volunteer exams, when I was your age, we had to go down to the FCC and we had to forge our own tokens out of steel in our own mills to get on the subway.
Still, both ways.
I tell you, I grew up listening to Gene Shepard on the radio, and he had this story that he told regularly about how he got his first license. He went to the FCC office in, I don't know, Illinois or someplace, and he had to draw a Colpitts oscillator and write the value of the parts and such, and he had to wait 6 to 8 weeks to get a postcard, and it was the happiest moment of his life. So I didn't experience any of that. I waited, I think, something like 2 weeks, and then it showed up on the FCC database. And so I missed that, but I had it vicariously through listening to Gene Shepard on the radio.
Yes, I am also a Gene Shepard fan. I still have a bunch of recordings of some of his shows on my phone and probably on a hard drive of my computer somewhere. Fabulous stories.
Yeah, I still find myself humming "The Beer Missed the Train."
Yes, and now he's walking. Yeah, I've read his biography, and supposedly he was a really not a nice person. But unlike his personality on the radio, which was fabulous.
Well, my understanding is he was basically a performer. But yes, people who knew him, many of them did not particularly care for him. And he was probably one of the worst fathers I've ever heard described. His son had to visit him at a college signing event because Gene wouldn't meet him anyplace. So he hunted him down when Gene was signing books or whatever during one of his college performances. It's sort of a shame because I like the persona. But apparently that was all it was a persona. And there's actually a gentleman who frequences this repeater who's actually met and experienced Gene Shepard in real life. And if he's out there and would like to say something, feel free.
Yeah, I guess not. My only, I guess, real life experience was a book signing for In God We Trust, and I've never worked him on the air, and never really saw him other than that. I mean, I was never down at the even one of the Limelight performances.
Yeah, I was too young for any of that. I was a little kid and recording his radio shows, but I could only afford so many Radio Shack cassettes. So I only had about a month's supply of them, and then I had to recycle the darn thing. So that was not fun at all. But, I don't know. Long John Neville I used to love to listen to. I was deeply into sort of entertaining but slightly crazy guys on the radio. And now look at me.
Ah, Long John. That's another guy. The problem was he was on, what was it, Midnight Till 5? So I couldn't catch the whole show. But I remember his sidekicks were a whole bunch of the sci-fi guys, the Frederick Poles and the Lester Del Reys and stuff like that. So I would try to listen, but Shepard was on from, what was it, 10:15, I don't know, 11:15 to midnight. He had a bunch of different times. And then Long John, and then I was also into AM broadcast band DXing, so I had to listen to stuff from far away also.
For some reason, I don't remember anything terribly engaging in distance. I talked my parents into getting green stamps. They got a shortwave AM FM solid state radio. Not a real high end item. And I listened to shortwave, and it was interesting. But that's where I found myself on the ham band. And for whatever reason, those guys were having really interesting conversations. So I spent most of the time on my shortwave radio listening to guys just chew the rag.
Interesting. No, I was, I mean, not phenomenal DX, but if you recall, there were 50 kilowatt clear channel stations, and then there were some that had a certain amount of power in the daytime and less power or off the air at night, and you could get you could listen to the stations that I guess they were blocking. I listened to, WFBO Fort Wayne, Indiana, and WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia, and I think it was KXEL in Iowa, and it was interesting. I mean, just to hear, like, local commercials and local conversations, nothing super, important, but just to hear what other folks had to say.
I guess. I don't know. For some odd reason, basically it was station IDs, it was weird commercials, it was music or news. And, there weren't guys like Long John, at least I didn't find them, in those distance communications. So, again, never really hung out there much after, say, the first month or two. I figured out a scheme to decode single sideband because, unfortunately, my transistor radio only worked in amplitude modulation. But I figured out that if I could take my cheaper, even cheaper, AM transistor radio and use its IF as a signal injector, a local oscillator, I could get the audio out of a single sideband transmission. So that was loads of fun.
Oh, that was very clever. You were using, I guess, the IF as a BFO. Yeah, I never did that. I guess by the time I was CW, and then, well, I guess after my CW radio, I had a national NCX3, which did sideband. I never went for the the shortwave receiver. Basically, I went from no interest in radio to getting my license, because I got licensed almost accidentally. I was a science-interested kid. One of my mom's friends got his ham radio license, so she said, well, why don't you go over and see what it's about? And he thought that I was going there because I wanted him to tutor me. So, presto change-o, a little while later, I got my license.
Yeah, that's good. I kind of worked the other way around. I was always kind of curious. I still am curious. And I was, unfortunately, one of those little kids who, if you gave me the slightest opportunity, I would disassemble things. And not only to the components, but to the guts of the components. I wanted to know what the capacitor looked like inside. I wanted to know what was the transformer made of. The bell of a telephone, switches, contacts. The thing that confused the heck out of me the most probably was taking apart a transistor and trying to figure out what the heck was going on there, because it just looked like a grain of sand stuck with some whiskered wires connected.
Yeah, well, a transistor was probably a couple of wires, three wires into a little can, and if you opened it up, it was just some goo in there. That was basically all there was. Anyhow, Roy, it's been good talking to you. I thank you for running the net. Unfortunately, my other net, the net control, had some family problems, but it gave me the opportunity to be on this net early. I'm going to get out of here. I want to do some reading. And I don't know if they've posted the recordings of the Virtual Ham Radio Expo. A couple of sessions I want to catch up on. So I will talk to you next Sunday. AC2GS, WB2KWC. Thank you for the information, and be well.
You're welcome, Ken. You're always welcome here. And I appreciate you being here and participating. So 73, and have a safe week. And I hope we have a chance to chat again next Sunday. Frank, I just want to say 73 to you as well. I hope you have a safe week, and I hope you come back and listen. And if you want to participate, all you have to do is write some text on the text field, and I'll clear a landing place for you.
Yeah, okay, very good. I don't know, wait, I'm not sure if the text field is available on the iPhone version of the Echo Link. If I'm sitting by the computer and not doing something else, I can come up in the chat. Anyway, 73, good to talk to you. WB2BXO. Have a good night.
Okay, very good, Frank. As far as my best recollection, I haven't used the iPhone Echo Link for a while, but it did at that time have a text field, because I sent this guy, Alex, a text before he kind of said that he wanted to actually talk to me. So there was text field at least at one point. But have a good week, and to everyone who might be still listening in, have a good week. And we'll be back to do this all over again next Sunday night. So this is AC2GS, and for the second time in about 40 minutes, I will be clear.
73, guys.
AC2GS,
yes, Hank.
Once again, Martin, thank you for joining us and doing a great job.
Thank you very much, Hank. I do appreciate the kind words.
Okay, I've learned something. If you saw that line, I can send texts through Echo Link. Certainly, WB2BXO.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Welcome to the W18CN repeater system.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
To serve the PL off, enter 2581W18CN.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater.
Welcome to the WA3FFJ repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater.
WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater.
WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. WA2GWA repeater.
W2VL repeater.
WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater. WA2GWA repeater.
W2VL repeater. WA2GWA repeater. W2VL repeater. WA2G.
North Cooper Fair Avenue. Wax 3715 at 10th Street. The WA3SFJ repeater. The time is 7 o'clock. Monday, August 10th. Good morning.
WA2GWA repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Welcome to the W1HEN repeater system.
WA1ODD, W1SV2 calling.
W1SV2, WA1ODD. Good morning, go ahead.
W1SV2 returning, good morning. Not the next few days, the same as the last several weeks. Other than that, things are status quo.
Same here. Pretty quiet. More work. More hot.
Yeah, that's about it. Repetition every day. That's for sure. Yeah, as you said, put the air conditioner in, and probably one day later it'll be over. I know I caught a couple times there, but then I said, it's only going to be another day or two, another week or so. Thought over it several times. All right, we'll assign weigh in check tomorrow morning.
Sounds good, we'll check in then. W1SV2, WA1ODD, signing off.
Okay, fine. WA1ODD, W1SVQ, signing off.
W1HEN repeater.
WA2GWA repeater.
WA2JNF Mobile Brooklyn, listening to you drive.
WA2JNF, this is N2DUE, good morning.
N2DUE, WA2JNF, good morning. Is your 706 working all right?
I think did we talk about that yesterday? Yes, we did, and this is the 706. I have no idea what was going on. I switched to the preferred antenna and got off that little stubby little profile thing that I was trying to use, and it worked. So I just have to remember to lower the antenna before I go into a parking garage or just create more havoc.
I feel like a little havoc. I'm just turning over Hamilton Avenue on Dismissed Street. I'm hearing a heterodyne on this frequency for some reason. I don't know whether the band's open or someone's chatting on the output.
Yeah, I heard that earlier. I was listening for a while. I remember, you know, again, I'm dating myself. There used to be a Connecticut repeater with the same frequency. I'm not sure if they were cutting it.
That's weird. She even took the machine out for a moment down here. I wonder if we got some nice chopo coming in from New England or something. Should be interesting.
Well, I don't hear it on this side, but I appreciate it. Saying it was, like I said earlier, kind of weird. But, no, thank you for coming back to my call. Thanks for yesterday as well. That was helpful. And hopefully, you know, I'll have to figure out what I can do on this. Maybe I'll, one of those things drives around with the automatic antenna that lowers itself a bit over the edge.
Well, at least you got an indoor spot to worry about on the street. I don't have to worry about this half wave on the roof. And what's also interesting, the heterodyne drops after a second when I release my mic, so it's almost as if I'm keying another machine with this PL in it, dropping out before the squelch tail of the Limark machine. Very odd.
That is interesting. Wow. Oh, well, radio phenomenon. I'm sure that there are people much smarter than me that will understand that. This account only wishes he could scratch the surface of what logical engineers know.
Well, I just hope this is not happening on UHF also. We got wiped out on Channel 16 a couple of weeks ago a number of times. Rather, I'd skip coming in.
That's interesting. Yeah, years ago I used to use, I think it was the 449 machine. I would travel up to North Jersey, up and down, I think it links to that, and that was the hard-selling machine. Is that the one you were referring to?
Actually, I'm referring to our public safety stuff we have here in the city. It's on Channel 16. It got whacked a little bit. Troppo. Past couple of weeks, I was just hoping we don't. This is not an evil omen for getting killed up there.
Gotcha. Well, yep, I hope the, stay the way they are. Nice to have the radio in the car. I'm going to sit here on the good old LA.
Just passing by our Queen's office. All right, how's traffic, by the way? Just out of curiosity, not that I want to know. I don't want to have to leave Brooklyn ever.
Well, you know, it's actually pretty decent. From the point where I came off the Grand Central, the LAE, 12 minutes to the tunnel, and that's been pretty consistent. I've been driving it for, I guess, about a month and a half now. I'm formerly a railroad rider and decided with a change of job, a new office on the east side, and try to Plus, I just don't know where the railroad is. I've had enough of that cross for a while, so I just figured I'd fix it up and see how long this is going to last.
That's odd. Pegidine actually took you out for a couple of seconds in the middle there. I guess what's ever happening, it's not getting any better. But we'll see. I'm still a couple of minutes from downtown. If anybody's interested in taking Smith Street through Brooklyn, go right ahead. It's wide open. Well, at this hour, it usually is.
Very good. I must apologize. I missed your name yesterday when I was working through my my radio issues. And for reference, my dad.
I see you said you missed my name, Stu, S-T-U, if that's what we're asking. I'm trying to battle the Hedrodynes here. This is really getting weirder and weirder.
Okay, yeah, that was it. Stu, nice to, thanks for the reminder, appreciate that, and see if I can keep it in the frame. I'll keep it short in case you're battling the elements.
Yeah, well, I think we're keying probably a carrier squelch machine, because it seems to drop about a second after either of us releases a mic. I can't believe someone is foolish enough to put up another machine with the same PL as this one. So, wherever there's a carrier squelch machine on this frequency, he's skipping in very nicely in downtown Brooklyn.
Thank you.